tuck my kids into bed, kiss my wife on the head. I got a serious smile, 'cause tonight I clean the streets. I'm not talking about dial. Spend the week wearing ties, walk the dog late at night. I take my daily
Hello and welcome to the 22nd episode of the Functional Nerds, 22. We took a break last week because I wasn't feeling well and John's a wuss and didn't want to do it by himself. He snickered. I heard him.
Yeah.
We're the guys who like to get together and talk about stuff, all kinds of stuff, computer stuff, science fiction, fantasy stuff, you name it, we talk about it. My name is Patrick Hester. I'm an author, a blogger, a podcasting dude, and an all-around functional nerd. And my partner in crime on this little episode is Mr. John Anilio.
Hey, I'm John. I write songs about science fiction and fantasy stuff and other nerdy things. You can get a lot of my music for free at scifisongs.blogspot.com. And tonight we have a music-focused episode. For those of you who follow Patrick and I, you know that we're also doing the SF Signal podcast. And, you know, so we're doing a lot of science fiction authors, and we had a run on the Functional Nerds where we had all these big-name science fiction authors, and it was great, but we're trying to diversify a little bit. And when we started the show, we had kind of planned on doing more music, and we kind of haven't done a lot of music, considering that's what I do. I had plans on having more music guests, and tonight we have music guests. And before I introduce the music guests, I figured we would have the other music expert that I know, and that is Z of the Geek Dad Hip Tracks podcast and of Hipster Please. Z, introduce yourself.
I think you just did.
All right. John. Well, there you go.
you totally stole my thunder there.
Okay.
He does that a lot.
Yeah, I'm a thunder stealer.
Anyway. Let me tell you all about yourself and now introduce yourself.
Sorry about that. Anyway, so our guest tonight, I think I found out through two sources, through Z and Hipster Please and Geek Dad, and also through Seattle Geekly. I feel like I heard some of your music there. And our guest tonight is Kirby Crackle. We have Jim and Kyle of Kirby Crackle. Say hello, guys.
Hola. Hello, guys. We like you.
So Jim and Kyle are really making the rounds these days and getting a lot of notoriety, very deservedly so, online for their brand of geek rock. A lot of their songs are about comic books and video games and
Green Lantern.
That was the first song I heard, the Ring Capacity song, and I loved it, and I went and bought it. I actually went and bought your album through eMusic. I don't know if you guys are familiar with eMusic. It's a good
subscription.
So I bought that there a couple weeks ago, and I've been listening to it a lot and turned a couple of people on to it, mostly Andrew Liptak, who wrote a nice big review of your album. I guess it was last week that he did that. But
Liptak is so jazzed that you guys are going to be on the show tonight.
Yeah.
I think he wanted to be on with you.
Yeah.
That review was awesome. So, you know, thanks.
Yeah, it was really nice.
If he's listening, that was really nice, man. Thank you so much for saying so many nice and completely undeserved words about us.
You know, there's I got the recent Locust magazine, and there's this write up on ReaderCon 2010, mm-hmm. and there's all these pictures of all these famous people, and it's like, you know, this famous person, and then in the corner, Andrew Liptak.
Yeah.
Which I thought was kind of cool.
Yeah, no, he was making the rounds. But anyway, so guys, why don't we start off a little bit? Why don't you tell us a little bit about your musical background, Jim and Kyle? Where, how'd you get started doing music?
Pick one. Kyle, you go first.
Okay, yeah, I should probably do that.
Okay, well, the human beauty of Jim and my relationship is we come from two different backgrounds. I am first and foremost a comics fan, where Jim's a comics professional, and I've just been in the music industry since I was 13, learned how to play guitar, walking my amp half a mile, you know, not through the snow, that would make it better, but to my friend's practice space, and just practiced 3 days a week from the age of 13 to now. You know, I just discovered rock and roll, and I put out, I'd say like 6 albums with a band called Lamest Terms, which is kind of like a group that we got together, you know, when we were 13 and then broke up when we were 24. So it's kind of like an extended childhood, and just kind of you know, I just wanted to become a Navy SEAL of rock and roll, you know, and that's like what I said since then. I just wanted to learn all I could and learn about hooks and songwriting. And, you know, I was into comics hardcore before I discovered rock and roll. And then like an ignorant teenager, I was like, I'm into rock and roll now. I don't have time for anything else. So I took a couple years off of comics and then I got back into comics. And, you know, when the band broke up, layman's terms that I had all those years, I decided, now, what is the coolest thing I could think of? And that would be to do what I did, only to combine that with my love of comics. Long story short, that got put off for a couple of years. And then Jim and I became friends, and we slowly started talking about it and decided to do it. So that's my background in music, and then comics and how I met Jim.
How about you, Jim?
How did our love bloom?
My background in music is that I'm a fan. I don't actually have a musical background. Surprisingly, I have an art background. I went to art school, and I've been in comics for years. I've done kind of all sorts of stuff throughout the comics industry. I've been both a writer, an editor, marketing guy. I run a convention. I own some comic book stores. So, like, my whole life has basically been like comic books, and but I've done a lot of writing as well. And so when I met Kyle, where we met through my comic book store, where he shops, and that's where we started kind of getting the genesis of the idea for Kirby Crackle. And then as we actually got together and sat down, you know, between the writing that I did and then obviously all the songwriting that Kyle did and then just the, you know, the, like Voltron, we combined into a songwriting machine, and that's how we got together. And that's, I guess, my musical background, which is basically non-existent other than I have a good ear for music and I really like writing things that rhyme.
Now, do you play drums in the band, or do you play other instruments in the group too, Jim?
I do not, actually. The cover of the second album is misleading. One of the things I would always do is mess around, like in practice. Like, we actually have a drummer when we do our live shows and our studio recording. And I would take the drumsticks, and I would make the wolf pink claws, because I'm a tard, and... you know, that's what I have to contribute to the practice session. So, you know, I sit around and I make, you know, we'll bring claws with drumsticks. So when we, like, went to do our album cover, we're like, yeah, this would be cool. And it is, and I love the illustration, but it's gotten me a lot of, like, so you're a drummer, right? And I'm like, nope. I just like pretending that I am a fictional character who is way more awesome than me in real life. So,
and people got to leave you alone on that, because people don't bug me. They're like, you play a Green Lantern guitar, right? And the people don't give me shit for that. You know? So,
well, I'm confused because Z told me that everything you guys do is recorded using a Casio PT1 from the 80s.
Yeah, but I make up a lot of shit, Patrick.
You have to keep stuff in the closet.
Well, I think it's interesting that you guys have mentioned just sort of the writing angle. And I've actually gotten in a good bit of trouble over the last couple of weeks for saying this. But with all due respect to guys like Paul and Storm, I think I really consider you guys to be the best geek rock sort of songwriting duo at it today. And I guess I've always been really fascinated by songwriting partnerships. So I guess I have to ask, how does a Kirby Crackle song come together with two lyricists? I mean, what's your process?
Well, first of all, man, that's really nice of you to say. That's very cool. You know, like 2 years ago, if we knew we were doing a podcast and someone said that, I would freak out and probably cry. So I'll cry when this is done. Enjoy. So thank you.
I was going to say, who are you fooling? You're going to cry after.
There's no crying in podcasting. There's no crying in podcasting.
Okay. Just crying after.
Yeah.
Well, it kind of starts. I have a studio in Seattle. And so basically, let me see. How do we write the last one? Same as the first, where Jim will come up to my studio. It's called the Orange Room upstairs. It's painted like a school bus, not with the lines of the kids crying, rubbing boogers on the windows, but mostly just the orange color. So basically we'll sit there and Jim will sit at the computer and I'll sit with my acoustic guitar and we'll say, what rhymes with Thor? Okay, whore is obvious. Okay, but let's make it a little harder. And really, if you saw like the 5 pages of Microsoft Word document pages that are after the real song. I don't know if we'd have any fans anymore because it gets pretty out there. But basically, it's just, you know, we'll kind of come up with a theme. I'll write some, maybe I'll have some song ideas that we're sitting around. Jim will kind of hum something, and I'll interpret that into a guitar part. And it's just really fun. It's like, you know, if it starts to get too, you know, intense or too difficult, we'll move on and we'll come back because, you know, we want to conceive a baby that was born out of love and not out of, you didn't freaking do the dishes. You know what I mean? Kind of.
So it sounds like Z is saying that you guys are the Lennon and McCartney of nerdcore.
Well, that's a good compliment. We're nerd rock. I might even go further and say nerd rock on that.
Yeah, and to use if we're going to use the analogy of just as what we were talking about before, we always joke, but it's more like Bernie Taupin, Elton John. Where, yeah. You know, you got a guy who writes the songs
right.
with Elton John, and then the guy who's on stage is Elton John. So a lot of people are always like, hey, are you, you know, like, are you going to be on stage? I'm like, no, that's not what I do. I write the songs, and I'm like the behind-the-scenes guy, and that's, you know, that is what I do. So
if you take the Taupin Elton John analogy a little bit further then Kyle has a secret crush on you.
Yeah, I
did. It's not a secret, really.
Well, he does have extravagant costumes and iconic sunglasses.
I'm starting with the sunglasses and the bowl cut, and we're moving.
Feather
we need people
boa,
to buy more albums so I can get these glitter sequin suits. Is what we need.
But that's actually good, though. I mean, if using the Taupin Elton John thing, I mean, Elton John was nothing before Bernie Taupin came along and started handing him the lyrics. It sounds like you know if that is working for you guys, then it's a very powerful thing, you know, and hang on to it.
Yeah, you know, it's funny.
It's
that
true. Plus, Chris or plus, you know, Kyle was nothing before I met him. And
that's true.
So really, I guess that analogy works on so many levels. I didn't even realize
the things I would do for $2 is all I'm saying, and we don't even need to go there. But you'd be surprised the number of $2 bills that you get. That is, you'd think it'd be, you know, 8 quarters or something, but no, it's like you just come out of nowhere.
Yeah, I was just having a long conversation with someone the other day about Elton John and Bernie Taupin, in that, you know, they were so lucky to sort of hook up because, you know, I think Bernie Taupin.
Yeah.
Yeah, poor choice of words on my part. No, but just that, you know, I think, you know, one would not be so successful without the other. You know, you have Bernie Taupin that basically wrote the lyrics and kind of just hung back and didn't tour or anything like that. Now, Jim, you do all the cons and stuff though with them, even though you're playing, I'm assuming, right?
Correct. Yeah. Like, well, what we end up doing is that the way we've gotten the word out for Bernie Crackle has been through like the sheer number of conventions that we've done. And what we do is we exhibit, you know, we get a table just like everybody else. And we sit there with our, you know, old Walkmans and we just kind of get people to listen to music and hand out flyers and just kind of hustle and try to get people to check out our music. So these shows, even if we're having a performance, like we're both there because we're both, you know, trying to get the word out about Kirby Crackle.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, when we try to do it, we try to, you know, we like to think of ourselves, you know, I mean, maybe it's accurate, maybe it's not, but we like to feel like we're a band of the people, like we're a band of our people, that how would we want someone like us to act or interact with the fans, not creating an artificial way of doing it, but we all love comics, we all love video games, you know, this is supposed to be fun, we want it to be a big club that everyone feels like a part of, you know, the fact that we can go to shows and people can sing in the front row, it's like, you got to acknowledge that, you know, you got to get everyone excited, because, you know, it's kind of like the DIY, you know, punk movement, if I could even dare equate it to that a little bit, you know, reaching back to MC Frontalot, MC Chris, Beefy, all the guys that are known and associated with nerdcore, we want to start that for nerd rock, and really, it's not a competitive thing, it's just like, everyone bring the love, we would love it if there were more bands that would write specifically about comic book and video game characters, because it just helps everybody.
I agree. I had an interview that was posted online today for this one literary website, and one of the interview questions was, you know, is there anybody else that's writing music like this? And I'm like, yeah, there are. And I mentioned Jonathan Colton, and I mentioned Marion Call, and I mentioned you guys as well. So, you know, I think, you know, Z, I think we spoke about this the last time you were on the show. I think you're seeing more people like Kirby Crackle and myself and Marion Call and all that, mm-hmm. where, you know, I think what happens is sort of the, you know, with it being able to record much, much more inexpensively. Now, Kyle, you said you have a studio. I record all my stuff on a laptop and a sound card, and, you know, you can get, and, you know, even I'm sure in your studio, I mean, I don't know how elaborate your studio is, but 15 years ago, what you have in your studio now, or what you'd have to do to get what you do now, would have cost probably thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars. You know,
think of all those $2 bills, Kyle. It's staggering.
Yes. Yeah, I know. I've seen all those $2 bills. Okay, that's another whole podcast. Well, you know, I totally agree. And I think back to the beginning of the Land of Terms days, now, not to bring that band up again, but we would, you know, spend $2,000 on three songs that didn't even sound that good. And, you know, the debut album we did in my studio, you know, honestly, if you listen to that album and you listen to our new one, if you're like, whoa, these guys got some money to record. Well, because we did. So we went to a bigger studio for that record, you know, and, you know, we're just trying to constantly up our game. And, you know, we don't need to spend 6 months in the studio. We just want to have it be, you know, what we feel is good sound quality and pump out songs that we're excited about and do it quick. So, you know, when I think artists, whether or not they will admit it, everyone overtly analyzes their own stuff. And this is the first thing I've ever done where I listen to it, the new album, and I think this sounds fresh to me. And this sounds quick and kind of just fast and a flow of energy. And that's how we did. And hopefully that translates to people.
Well, I think it definitely does. But you mentioned the two albums. Something that I've always thought was really interesting is, I think there's, you know, probably there's definitely a difference with regard to mix, but as far as the energy and the style and the tone, I guess I was really amazed at how consistent it was between the self-titled album and E for Everyone. And it makes me wonder, I mean, you guys, most bands, they do their initial release and then there's sort of this sophomore slump where they have to find their sound. You guys seem to have sort of come out of the gate with that. I mean, how long were you working together before that first album came together?
We spent basically all of 2008 writing and kind of getting album number one together. It was pretty much no exaggeration, pretty much about a solid year. And then, you know, along the way we did, you know, record a little bit, but, you know, the first album came out March of 2009. And we pretty much New Year's 2008 is when we, or right after New Year is where we started to kind of get together to do this. So it was a full year of just, you know, working on album number one. And then
we did Back to the Beginning first, right?
Yeah, Back to the Beginning was the first song we ever did, followed by One of the Guys. And then after that, little by little, like, you know, we spent the rest of the year working on the rest of the songs. And then what happened is we released that album and we started touring. We actually released it at New York Comic Con. It was the very first show we ever did. So we're actually really excited because, not to go too far off tangent, but thanks to, you know how they move their dates? They used to be an early in the year show and now an October show.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that 18-month gap, that means literally we've not been back to New York for New York Comic Con. We went there for a concert and some other stuff. But we've actually never been back to the show we debuted at. So we're really excited that this October we're actually going back to New York Comic Con with our second CD, which no one at that con in a way has ever seen. So,
that's awesome.
Yeah, so we debuted at New York Comic Con in 2009 and spent the year plugging away, promoting the first album. And then about halfway through the year or so, or, you know, more like fall, we started kind of dinking around and really started working on E for Everyone and kind of did the same cycle where we spent the rest of the year working on E for Everyone. And we recorded it in January
it was 10 days, you know, we're like, we got to get it done in 10 days. And we had this little whiteboard that we would check off little things about the whole time. You know, it was pretty, it kind of got down to the wire, but it gave some immediacy to it.
Cool. So now are you guys coming out just for the New York Comic Con, or do you guys have do you guys sort of, you know, parachute into the cons, or do you try to hit some other sort of venues along the way? Obviously, coming from Seattle, I imagine you're just flying in maybe for the Comic Con.
Yeah, you know, we get there a couple of days earlier, and we, you know, after the first couple of shows that we did and realized we need to pull our head out of our ass and make use of the time that we're there, you know, it's like, oh, maybe people want to see us because we're a band. What a concept, right? So, you know, it's you know, we always kind of run into some conflict with, you know, explaining to certain, you know, promoters the first time around, like, okay, this is what we do. And they're like, what? You know, no, this is what we do. What? I don't get it. Okay. Just watch the video, get it. Because they understand, like, hearing it, like, you know, if I didn't know anything about it, I would think, oh, maybe this is going to kind of suck. You know, I get that. So, you know, we just try to explain as clearly as we can what we do. And, you know, we're working on two shows for the New York show, you know, whether it just be myself acoustically or the band. You know, we're going to for sure do one full band show. So we're flying the guys in for that.
Cool. How many members in the band altogether?
It's guys that I've known throughout playing. Our drummer's named Nelson Estes, bass player, his name's Scott Andrew, guitar player, Patrick Porter, and keyboardist, Bryce Francis. So there's four, and then me on stage. I play in another band, you know, side thing with Patrick and Scott. So we kind of just have this, like, incestual scratch my back, we'll scratch yours. And they're kind of, you know, they're pop culture fans, but they're not comic fans. So the first time they went to a convention, it was just, you could see their eyes just, you know, blow out of their head. They're like,
It's different, yeah. It's different.
Yeah. It's terrifying to outsiders, as it should be.
Now, are you guys going to be playing at the Comic-Con, or are you just going to have the booth there and stuff? Like, do you have a performance scheduled at Comic-Con?
At the con itself, we're going to do... it hasn't been confirmed, so don't hold me to it, but we... what we do is this kind of fun, like, VH1 Storytellers kind of thing where we take, where we sit down and actually, like, you know, with a couple of mics and just talk about our songwriting process, kind of like what we do here, except very specific to each song. Usually we'll start it off with, we'll pick a song and talk about it, and then Kyle plays it acoustically. And then we talk about, then we usually, you know, we kind of open it up to the audience because, you know, there's definitely people there who are there out of curiosity, but also people who are fans. And so they're like, tell us about, I don't know, one of the guys or Great Lakes Avengers or whatever. And then we can sit around and talk about, like, you know, share anecdotes about what we did while we were writing those books, writing those songs. And then, perform and just have a good time with the fans in a really kind of more intimate setting rather than like the full performance. So we get to kind of get exposed in a different way.
How do you explain Great Lakes Avengers? Okay. See, some super teams suck.
Yes, they do.
Take it away, Kyle.
Join the X-Men, but I think they're maybe racist. Just because I'm human, they don't want my help. It seems it doesn't really matter if your superpower's firing soon to melt. I tried to join the Justice League, but Batman was a douche to me, and Black Canary wouldn't tell me hi. And Plastic Man just threw a middle finger that was 30 stories high. I got a message from the Great Lakes Avengers. They offered me a membership, but I did not accept, 'cause they're a war.
Hey, well, I'll tell you the truth on that. So the night before, I went to a Pearl Jam concert, and I wasn't feeling too good that week. I was kind of just down about work and just kind of stressed out. And we heard this, and Jim and I had been talking about rocking. Like, okay, we need a couple more rockers. We already had, like, Vault 101 and on, but we didn't have Take It From Me and Great Lakes Avengers. So I was just jazzed. And the next day we met, I was like, we need to just kick out the fucking jams on this one, like, big time. You know, just, like, burn it through. You know, we recorded with a whole different kind of punk rock mic setup, so it was, like, more live-sounding and just layered big guitars on big guitars. And basically it's just about, you know, the protagonist trying to go through the channels to get on his favorite super team, combining, you know, the worlds of the DC universe and the Marvel universe. We didn't try to keep it separate. You know, this is like crossover what-if times here. And, you know, no one wants a superhero that fires tuna melts out of their hands. It's just gross and it smells. And so, you know, there's like, hey, I want to be in the X-Men. They're like, no, we're racist. Hey, I want to be in Justice League. But Batman's like, I'm a douche. Don't you remember? So, basically, the GLA is like, hey, keep calm. We're still over here. And eventually, he just decides he wants to go with some heart, which is the GLA.
I'd completely forgotten about the Great Lakes Avengers.
Now, you
mentioned, we hadn't.
Yeah.
Which is why the song is important.
Which is why there's no place to breathe in that song, which is why I never forget, because it's evil.
And I love how you mentioned Alpha Flight in that song too, don't you?
Yeah, you have to be Canadian to join that, of course.
Oh, I love that. I hadn't thought about Alpha Flight in years. I was actually in my parents' house. I have like these two long boxes of old comics up there, and there was some X-Men Alpha Flight crossover that I had all the issues to. So
it's yeah,
like, really, there's really actually a Canadian hip hop clique called Alpha Flight, which
awesome.
Get amazing points just based off that.
Wasn't there also a Wasn't there also a Russian team called, like, Omega Red?
Omega Red was the actual villain. Yeah.
Right, and there was I thought there was a DC team called Omega Red.
I don't know. Was there? I don't know.
And they were all speedsters. It was in The Flash, I think.
I mean, We know everything. We're a comic book rock band, don't you know?
I know a lot. Trust me.
Now, it's
scary.
You guys have some songs that are more video game based. Are you guys looking to try to play something like PAX East or PAX Prime?
Hey, Jim, are we looking to play PAX?
You know, we always look to play PAX, but PAX tells us that we're not really their cup of tea. So,
really?
You know, if you're scratching your head, so are we. But since they're like, no, that's not really for us, I'm like, all right, well, then we are not going to play PAX. So it's kind of simple as that.
Yeah.
Jonathan Colton, MC Front a lot, but not Kirby Crackle. That's a little weird.
I guess it lands on opposite day. I don't know. I don't get it.
So. the other thing, I'm sorry, Z, do you want to go? You can go ahead.
Oh, no.
Rocket Red Brigade is the name of the DC.
There you go.
Russian superhero. Thank you, Wikipedia. Our friend in life.
Yeah.
Making everyone seem like an expert in everything.
I wanted to ask you guys about your videos. You guys have a bunch of really cool videos, the most elaborate being the one for On and On. And then you have the animated one. And I saw one today that you have for, like, it's sort of a Mega Man theme. So why don't you tell us a little something about how the videos get started? I think they really add a lot to your whole thing. So why don't you tell us a little bit about those?
Well, Jim, first we'll let Jim do the disclaimer on the Mega Man video. Jim, tell.
Okay, let's start. So we'll start from the newest. So what we've been releasing occasionally, like, you know, people just want to hear the album version of a song on YouTube, and we didn't want it to just be, you know, something simple, but we'd release, like, you know, Ring Capacity like that with, like, a little photo montage. And just we wanted to do something a little more fun than just put the song on there with just the album cover. And what happened is that, like, having seen our previous videos, when we were like, well, we have a new video out, everyone was like, oh my god, a new Mega Man video. And they watch it and they're like, this Mega Man video blows. And because they're waiting for, like, you know, kind of what our brand has become known for, which is, like, making these full-on, cool-ass videos. And instead, we were, like, trying to be very clear, like, no, this is really, like just a glorified album version that we just set like one piece of animation that runs over and over. And then we did like almost a, using the old Mega Man, like the 8-bit font, karaoke style, so you could have all the lyrics underneath. And we thought it was a lot of fun, and we still stand behind our, we stand behind our video, but I can see how our fans came away being like, well, that's some bullshit right there.
So this was really just for us to vent in that 5 minutes that we took to do that. So thank you. And we do the on and on video, right, Jim?
Yeah, so why don't you talk about on and on? And I'll talk about up, up, down, down.
I like this little trade off thing. High five, very nice. Okay, so the on and on video was directed by our friend Todd Downing, who was known for this movie called Ordinary Angels. You can look it up online. And he's a local director, a good guy. And our friend J.D. Green played Logan. And for years, Todd was like, I want to do a Wolverine fan film with J.D., but I want to wait till he gets to the age where, you know, it makes a little more sense. He's just not a little cute-faced boy. So he waited until J.D. was like, I'd say like late 30s. And because, you know, our whole thing is Wolverine should be the short,
he's 36
body.
Right now.
He's 36? Okay, he didn't get mad if I said late.
Yeah.
I count his legs. That's a 35. So basically, it's like a short, squatty kind of guy, you know, like the Derek Robertson stuff and Mark Etheria stuff. And so basically, it's just a week in the life of Logan. You know, Monday comes, fly to the Savage Land. Tuesday night, fight with a gang in hand. On and on it goes. So basically showing the weariness of the life of Wolverine. So we shot it in Seattle over 2 weekends, shot a bar scene with a guy dressed up as Colossus and Cyclops and a woman, a Wonder Wrestle local actor dressed up as Rogue, and people seemed to like it, so we were excited because we really like it.
Cool.
Cool. Why don't you tell us about the Up, Up, Down, Down video, too, because that's a great one.
Up, Up, Down, Down, Left, Thank Right, you. Left, Right, BA, Start.
Up, up, down, down, left, right, BA, select, start. I'm trying to unlock your heart from years of walls. And when Hyrule falls, I'm hoping that the things I do are working to connect with you. I see that you're free, quit my shop. I'd like for you to know my name. They call me Box 138. I think we are due for a walk. Like me, you pull from the middle, skip the books up on the top. So up, up, down, down, left, right, BA, select, start. I'm trying to unlock your heart from years of walls.
Yeah,
that's burned into my brain. It's like every
it is burned into
game.
Our brains as well.
That's what makes it a good hook.
Yeah, so. One of the things we wanted to do, you know, from the get-go is, like, a lot of our songs we feel translate very well into animation. But, you know, animation is no, like, you know, it's no joke. It takes a long time for stuff to get done in animation. It's not, you know, three minutes at, you know, kind of 24 frames per second, that's a lot of work. So we contacted the Art Institute of Seattle, and we're like, hey, is there anyone who might be willing, like, you know, we'll figure it out. Like, you know, it's not like work for free. Do you want to do a video based off of one of our songs? And we got hooked up with this girl named Betsy Lee, and Betsy is this awesome animator who took our song, and then, like, we talked out, like, our thoughts about, like we envisioned this scene and this scene and this scene, and obviously just taking what's in the video, and then we kind of, like, let her go. We got the storyboards back, and we were able to be like, well, this seems kind of weird. This is not what we thought. Everything else is cool. And little by little, went through this great, like, creative process where we had input, and she, you know, it's not boring for the animator because we're like, well, what do you think? Like, what do you want to do? What color palette do you want to use? Like, how do you feel about this scene? And so we could go back and forth, and we ended up with this great collaborative video. And when it came out, people loved it. And lately, we just got a great write-up on Geeks Are Sexy based off of Great White Snark, and that was picked up by The Escapist. And so, like, we released that video 2 months ago, and it had about 11,000 views. And in the last week, it had another 11. So now it's at 22,000 views in just a week.
Nice.
Sweet. Sweet.
Now,
and Betsy, who did Up Up Down Down, just to give her an extra shout out, it's BetsyDraws.com. She's also the one that knocked out that Take It From Me video right quick for us as well. Yeah.
Now, obviously, we're talking about the Konami code here, the up, up, down, down, left, right, left, right. Are you guys familiar with the Xbox code?
The Xbox code?
Yeah, in order to open up secret things on the Xbox, you have to hold the left trigger or the left stick down, the right stick up, press the left trigger, the right trigger, Y, X, A, B, the left trigger, right trigger, right button, left button. I'm just joking. It's a pain in the ass. It's ridiculous. I miss the easy days.
You miss two buttons?
I do. A lot of times I do, yes.
Well, Kyle, you mentioned that.
I especially miss it when I'm playing one of the Star Wars games against a six-year-old and he's beating the living crap out of me with a lightsaber.
We can relate.
That's
how the song Teabag came around, just so you know.
It all makes sense now.
Teabagging, it's what I gotta do. It's not like I'm desperate to put my junk on you. I'm just sick of losing and dying all the time. Teabagging, cause I'm killed by little kids. I get so frustrated cause I can never win. So when I finally kill one, I want them to never forget. I've only got a moment for this embrace when you can see me squalling.
But Kyle, you mentioned Pearl Jam earlier, and I think the sort of the obligatory musician question is always, you know, what were your musical influences? What is it that that you sort of draw the Kirby Crackle sound from?
You know, well, first of all, Kirby Crackle, you know, we have slow songs, but they're tongue in cheek. You know, we allow ourselves to have ballads, but we're not trying to make any big statement in them. You know, I think it's just high energy rock pop, you know, rock first, pop second. I am a big fan of hooks. I'm a big fan of music in general. Whether it be, you know, the new R. Kelly song that I just got out of my head and now just 'cause I said that's back in. Thanks for that. You know, just any kind of freak nasty R&B, you know, hook that gets stuck in my head or anything. I'm a big fan of melody. I'm a big fan of, you know, Weezer, Foo Fighters, Pearl Jam, Jim Blossoms. You know, I grew up in the early 90s as a kid that, you know, was in middle school and, you know, in the quote-unquote grunge era where on the front page of the morning paper it was like grunge fashions. It was like that level where, you know, Michael Caine was dressed up in the issue of Vanity Fair. And for me, you know, I think for people that were involved in it, it was really annoying and, you know, it felt like the world was crashing down their scene. For me, I loved it and I just think of it as like a defining moment in my life and where I was exposed to something that I think, you know, involuntarily was decided for me that I'm going to do for probably the rest of my life. So, you know, I like communication and I like good sounds. So if that works for Kirby Crackle, as long as it does, I'm into that.
Definitely. Okay.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, guys, you know, we're getting near the end here. So why don't you tell us a little bit, you know, we at the end of the show, we like to like kind of plug our whatever projects we're working on, whatever we have coming out. So we already spoke that you guys are going to be at the New York Comic Con. What are there any other new songs you're working on? Any other appearances or performances coming up that you want to tell us about?
We're going to be at Fan Expo in Toronto next weekend, actually. So that'll be a lot of fun. We'll be debuting a brand new button set that we just today on Twitter released the first image of. The four button set. And
goddamn it for making me excited about buttons. It's like, how is this the high point of my day? Damn you, Kirby Crackle. Damn you,
man! Yeah, you know,
buddy.
You know how you get over that, Z? You become a marketing director.
with a boss who says, I want buttons for an event. And you say, okay, I can order those. He's like, no. I have this machine in my garage.
No.
The button press.
Oh, yes. That's when you get over buttons.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, like Jim said, we're going to the Fan Expo in New York, possibly Long Beach. We're doing a lot of stuff. Oh, we're, if you're in the Seattle area this Sunday, we're playing a benefit for underprivileged kids to raise money for school supplies in the Seattle area. So we're going to be rocking outside with the full band. You can find that on our website. We're big Twitterers, so, if you guys are on the Twitters and you like finding about the what we think is the greatest in kind of geek culture and stuff, we try to pimp Chewbacca shoes and, Stormtrooper beer hats. Yeah. Exactly. That was good. I like that. We're starting to Ustream practices and stuff. So, people, if you're, in, bumfuck wherever and we can't get there for some reason, you can feel like you're at a show if you want to come to the practice space. We announce on Twitter when we're going to be Ustreaming from our practice space and, we do song requests and stuff like that. So anything we can do to make people feel like they're part of this club and this culture, because we want people to feel like that.
And Ustream is pretty cool. I'm digging that. That's growing, I think.
I think so.
Especially with online.
Yeah, I think with
devices.
The wide availability of cameras. Yeah.
Yeah. Just saying the online content providers are really getting into it. You see a lot of, and we talked a little bit about PAX. What's his name? Kurtz from PvP Online, a lot of times he'll Ustream himself drawing the strip, which I think is
right. Yeah,
cool.
That's cool.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, well, and I think also like when it comes to things like the availability, kind of what I was saying, but like even on the first Ustream we did was off of the iPhone. Like that's just like, so getting people access to things that are, so you don't need to get like $1,000 like camera. You can get something that like, technically it was already built into your phone and the sound's not that bad and the video's not that bad. And you can actually just like, so kind of anybody can do it. It's pretty awesome. So we've been having a lot of fun with stuff like that.
Nice.
Yeah. And one thing I want to mention real quick that I always forget is, that's what the big thing we're working on is we're really actively working through promotional groups in LA to try to get ring capacity on the Green Lantern soundtrack. So we're going through the official channels that way. Also, we have a fan page that a fan set up for us. It's under, what is it, Jim? Just like get ring capacity on the Green Lantern soundtrack, where you can go in there and write comments and just kind of, if you support that, it's a place where you can show support for, something that, I would try over.
Space. It seems I've yet to find my place. I'm guarding 2814. I don't know why it's chosen me, but from the corner of my eye I catch a glimpse of evil light. The fear tries to swallow me like I'm just some guy with an emerald.
I support that, and also a recasting of the lead role.
Nathan Fillion.
Who? Dudley Moore? Who?
Nate fucking Fillion, my friend.
Nathan Fillion. I agree.
And no CGI suits.
Right. I think it would be a shame if Ring Capacity did not get on that soundtrack. We will do our best to help promote that. We should really get. Andrew Liptak is also a member of the 501st, the Stormtrooper guys that set up.
We are familiar with the 501st.
Yeah, perhaps we can get Andrew to maybe mobilize them to help out with that, because I think that would be maybe we need like a whole Stormtrooper unit to go into Los Angeles and with blasters drawn. I think that
I'm
would
I'm sure
help.
Nothing bad would happen.
No.
And really, they what we'd hate is to like get there and have like Nickelback do some just like shitty closing credit song that has nothing to do with it. Or, but I will say this, I would whore myself to the degree of having Nickelback cover Ring Capacity if that's what it takes.
I do want to throw out there that, I mean, if you got a ton of people in Stormtrooper outfits in L.A., no one would notice. They'd
yeah, that's
just
true.
Another day in L.A.
True.
Yeah, they'd honk and flip them off is what they'd do.
Cool. Yeah. Cool. All right.
So,
well,
Twitter.com/KirbyCrackle.
Correct. And Kirby Crackle Music for all the links, all the videos, everything.
Okay. Go ahead, Jim.
And then just as one last promotional is we have a brand new animated video that will debut in just a couple weeks. And it is for Zombie Apocalypse. So fully animated by a couple of friends who are ex-animators on the awesome Adult Swim show Metalocalypse. And so it looks super great. And we can't wait for people to check it out. So keep your eyes peeled, and there you go.
Sweet. Z, what do you have going on this this week over at Hipster Please and Geekhead?
I'm putting together a toothless internet petition to force Jim and Kyle to make a Kurt Wagner tribute track. I need a Nightcrawler tribute track, fellas.
Okay. All right. You got $2.
Excuse me. The fucking world needs a Nightcrawler tribute track.
And I just named it for you, Bamf.
Yeah. Bamf. You know. Bamf.
We had a lyric that was like on the original one, and if anyone takes it, we'll kill you. It's something like I'm gonna bamf on out of here. So we could do that.
There you go. Hey, AZ, great article on the chipset.
Oh yeah, yeah. The Nintendo. Boy, I pissed off a lot of chiptune musicians with that title.
Oh.
Apparently, I it was something to the effect of basically the long and short of it is the High Court in the UK has barred the import or use of the R4 cart, which is a flash cartridge you can use to do not only bootlegs but also music and sort of homebrew applications on the Nintendo DS, and they're sort of eyeing it across the board, saying that, you know, we're these quote-unquote game copiers, you can't have them, you can't use them, and you can't even employ them for professional gigs. You know, if you're a chip musician, you can't play out with them. And I sort of put it out there as this could be a death nail for chip tunes, because I was under the impression that I could use, you know, journalistic overstatement. Apparently not.
Yeah, everybody should go. Everybody should go to your website and check that out. That was awesome.
Yeah. Yes.
John, what do you got going on?
Oh, I did the Triceratops song last week, and with some lyrical contributions from Z over there. So that's nice. Kind of like little demo-y things of that up. At some point, I'd like to maybe record an actual good version of that rather than me just like strumming a bazooki and stuff.
And what did you call that? That was the group of people helping you out.
Oh, crowdsourcing it?
Crowdsourcing. Thank you. Yes, crowdsourcing.
God. Yeah, you know, I just got
I've been big... sick, people. My brain's not back yet.
I had big contributions from a couple people. I thought I was going to get like a lot of little contributions. I got really big contributions from Z, who wrote like all the verses and stuff. But it was a fun little experiment, and I think the song came out pretty well. And I'd like to record. I don't know what I'm going to do with it, but it was more of like I want to see how this works if people really get behind this. And it was a fun thing. So I got that there, and you know, you could download that and a lot of my other stuff. My stuff's available also on iTunes and all that. So that just puts Sci-Fi Songs or John Anilio into the iTunes or Amazon search engines. And you can follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/John Anilio.
Awesome.
Cool, man.
And I have the blog, atfmb.com, and the podcast here at the Functional Nerds. I also have the Twitter feed, twitter.com/atfmb. Also, check out our SF Signal podcast over at sfsignal.com. We're doing some different things over there, and people are really digging that, so that's pretty cool. We have the daily news updates over on Functional Nerds, and that's brought to you by Scott Seeley, who is 8-Bit Dad on Twitter. Anything else you can think of, John?
I think that's it. I think we can finish it up there.
All right, we'll call it a day. Thanks to everybody for being on. Z, thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me. Always a pleasure, fellas.
Kyle and Jim, even though Kyle's making tons of background noise, we thank you for being with us tonight.
Oh, my Lord.
Thank you for having us, man.
You knew we should have been building those shelves.
Yeah, he's like, man, I gotta pour some water and do a little hammering. And
well, the dog had surgery today, so I was doing something right at the end there. So he's good, though.
Good to hear.
The only other thing I have, John, is I do need to take some pictures because someone gave me a classical guitar that apparently is like 60 years old.
Okay.
And might be worth some money. Who knows?
All right, I'll take a look at it for you.
I want to show it to you. All right, I think that's it. We're going to call this podcast done. Thanks to everybody for coming on. Check out FunctionalNerds.com. Check out Kirby Crackle and check out Hipster Please and John and Elio. Good night.
Thanks, guys. Good night.
Bye-bye. Cool, thanks, guys. Good night. Let go to